Hi, Grapes.
Okay, that's better. Up. Oh. Oh. Okay, my voice is different. Okay. Well, hi, Grapes. Hi, Grapes. I was gonna ask if you were okay because you kept changing color, but then I dropped my voice. I've been carrying my voice, like, in my hands, and I dropped it on the ground, and the floor's filthy, so I just picked it back up off the ground, and I figured it was fine. It was kind of covered in lint, but... Oh my goodness. I just picked it up off the ground and just put it back in. And well, I guess the 5-minute rule doesn't really apply to your voice. Aluminum linoleum, aluminum linoleum. Peter Piper picked a peck of When we met, I told you I was a guy. Remember? Like, I said so this shouldn't be a surprise, or... I don't know. I'm changing. Grapes, I've had a very long day. Like, do you ever have a day that feels like 7 months? 7 months of breathing and waking and sleeping and promising to do better. Like, in that amount of time, you could graduate college, get a job, get laid off the job, write a book, move to Seattle, and then start, like, a whole new job. Like, 7 months is enough time to change completely, or just enough time to not change at all. Or maybe both. 7 months is a long time, and my day has felt like it took 7 months. And time doesn't really exist in hell, so maybe it did. And I sound different now, I guess, and I look different. I look really terrible right now, because I had kind of a rough day, and parts of me just started popping out of me, like, I sort of turned inside out-ish. That's why I had my voice in my hands. I was talking to embarrassment, and then... Well, I sort of had a lump in my throat, like you do when you get really upset, and I was so upset that I felt like I might sob if I opened my mouth, but I had to open it anyway. Well, it doesn't matter what I was gonna say. I opened my mouth, and the lump pushed its way up and out of me, and then I was holding, like, a burning coal. Well, it was very bright and hot, like a burning coal, but it was kind of slimy and purplish, so it wasn't exactly like a burning coal. It was uncomfortable, it was slimy. And it kind of burned my hand. And then, you know, I couldn't talk. An embarrassment has seen this happen before, apparently, so she let me come stay here till I feel better. We're in embarrassment's house right now. We're in a room in the back, and Lemon... Do you remember Lemon? The little girl with the missing friend? Lemon was right about embarrassment's house. The floor is a thick carpet of clothes, and the walls are covered with layers and layers of unidentifiable knickknacks. There's big windows in this room, though. And lots of plants. Plants that have crickets and frogs in them, apparently. And and it really, really smells like weed. Like marijuana. Yeah, I'm embarrassing myself. It smells like weed. It's all kind of comforting, is what I'm trying to say. So embarrassment said I could hang out in here for a little while until all my insides were inside me again. I like my voice now. And when we met, I told you I was a guy. When I was on Earth, this is closer to what my voice sounded like a lot closer. And I told you, so you... I don't know. Everyone changes, I guess, but... I told you. And I'm glad it's back. It's funny, because I'm actually holding my gender identity right now, and it's weird. It looks like a loose wool sweater, but that's not the weird part. The weird part is the color. It's not a color humans could see, but It's like what you think blue looks like when you're a little baby and you hear the word blue, but you haven't had the chance to see blue yet. If that makes sense. I'm also holding my self-esteem and my left lung, which is pretty weird. None of those are supposed to be outside of your body, but the gender identity and the self-esteem make sense, at least. But I don't know why I have lungs. I'm a demon. I'm dead. I breathe, I guess, but I don't need to breathe, so I don't know. My days. I'm a mess. Okay, so my incorporeal form really fell apart, and by the looks of you, you're changing too, which is wild, because, well, I mean, obviously, you're dead. You probably think you're alive, and you probably think I'm pretend, but really, you're dead, and you're an incorporeal soul trapped inside of a grape jam jar, dreaming your life over and over, and, you know, you're in hell. But I guess you can still change in your dream, because you changed color. Like your soul changed color. I wonder what's happening to you in there. I'll tell you what happened to me this morning. Okay, hell doesn't have mornings, but I'm going to call it morning anyway because that's when I woke up. So this morning I was fine and I went to the Congress of Devils to surrender because that's my job. Remember, a man kidnapped me and sacrificed me to surrender to be a demon and her servant. All that. I mean, I guess I was talking to you about that yesterday when we were trying to clean all those squids out of Surrender's attic. I told you about how this guy performed a demonic ritual and tried to make me eat my own heart, but hearts are really hard to eat, so we had to microwave it like a plate of dinosaur chicken nuggets. It feels like it's been 7 months since we talked about that, but anyway, today started off kind of nice. Surrender was ignoring me, which was awesome because I could stand there and look helpful without actually having to run any errands for her. And Pride and Hedonism, they're devils, but they aren't on the Council of Devils like Surrender, because they're retired or something like that. I'm not sure. But I know Pride owns a bar, and Pride and Hedonism are dating. Either way, Pride was giving a presentation on how Lucy should defy God's will and eradicate Hell's remaining economy. And I think Hedonism was just there to cheer on her girlfriend, honestly, which was sweet, but I don't know if Pride really needs it, because, well, she's Pride. Pride is her whole thing. It was cute, though. Anyway, Surrender kept interrupting her. Like, obviously she was mad about Pride's idea, but Lucy, you know, Lucifer, she liked it. And it's really easy to tell when she likes something because she's a giant cat and she starts purring. And sometimes if she's really happy, she'll close her eyes and lick her nose. But like in a dignified way. So Lucy was really happy, but Surrender hated Pride's idea. And Lucy wouldn't listen to Surrender, so after the Congress was done, Surrender took me back to her office, and she was mad. She was really mad that Lucy wouldn't listen to her, and she had this idea, and she wants me to help, and I don't want to help. And I told her that, and she yelled at me. And the thing about Surrender yelling, it's not like just getting yelled at. I've worked in retail before. I was the assistant manager of a 7-Eleven. I went to, like, school as a child. I've been yelled at plenty. And honestly, until I worked for Surrender, I didn't think anyone was better at yelling than middle-aged white women with $70 highlights and expired coupon, but Surrender, do you remember getting yelled at as a little kid? Like your parents were definitely gonna get a divorce, but you didn't know that yet because you were 7. And being 7 was stressful in general because you were too old for light-up Ninja Turtle sneakers, but too young to process the fact that your parents definitely hated each other. So, you know, you're 7, you pretend to be a cat, and you eat a whole bowl of cat food, and then you throw up all over the bright blue living room carpet. You know, because you're kind of confused about the state of the world and your place in it. But then you get yelled at. And you remember your place in the world. And when you get yelled at as a kid, It's by someone who's known you your whole life. Like, you've only been alive for 7 years, and this big person is very angry at you, and they've been there those whole 7 years. They've seen every embarrassing, vulnerable, awkward thing you've done. They know you to your core, and they yell at you like they know you to your core. And that's what surrender's like. She's this 12-foot-tall, eternal, ageless deity that knows pretty much everything. And well, I'm me. And when I died, I was 22, which I generally feel very grown up about, until she yells at me. But I guess when I was 7, I felt very grown up too. You know, with the cat food story, I put milk over the cat food and ate it with a spoon. I was pretending to be a tuxedo cat. So I ate all this cat food, like cereal, like a gentleman, like a cat in a tuxedo. And yeah. And Surrender said, well, I said that I disagreed with her idea, and she said a lot of things. I tried to use, like, a hyper-specific metaphor to explain why I thought maybe her idea wasn't great. And I guess metaphors and stories aren't that different. But she thought I was telling her a story. I guess it sort of was a story about Isaac and about how I should have gone to heaven. But she said, ah, yes, and she has that dumb old American movie star accent. I don't think I'm very good at mimicking it. But she said, I've heard about your stories for the jar. Let me tell one. Let me tell the shortest Simon story. Once there was a monster, and he was terrible and scary. But then people loved him anyway. The end. Did I do it? Did I nail it? You said, Isaac always tells stories about animals. Simon, you always tell gender nonconforming horror stories about monsters that want to hold hands. And I'm just standing there in her office. And her office is made out of all these gold gilded bones, floors, walls, everything. And I say office because that's the English word they use for it, but it's massive. It has columns. So I'm just standing there, staring past her at a golden skull that looks very small and very human. And I say, I like sweet horror stories. Which is true. And I don't think I can do her accent. But she said, yes, of course. That's why you make up stories about abominations who secretly and desperately want to be treated with love and human decency. Ghosts who befriend little girls. Giant murderous owls who just want to be friends. But you won't open up to see if people will treat you decently. Even in hell, you just try to fit in, be perfect. No. No, you don't want to be perfect. You want to be bulletproof. You're internalizing your pain in hopes that you'll fit perfectly into a flawed society that openly hates you. Your idea of perfection is violent. It's more violent than I am and more flawed than Lucifer herself. And even if you could achieve perfection, no one is immune to pain. Nor should they be. It's absurd that you think you'd get to heaven knowing how heaven works. It's absurd to think that swallowing yourself your whole life would lead to less pain than being hated by some people. Even now, in hell, you're pursuing this deeply violent, hateful idea of perfection. And you're trying to live up to a standard created to specifically exclude you. Like, for Satan's sake, eat a piece of pie and kiss a man. And help me with my plan. Enthusiastically. And I said I didn't think all those things were morally equivalent, and I kept staring into the eyes of this golden skull and trying not to listen to her. And she said they're not morally equivalent. At least she agreed with me on that. And then she said kissing a man and assisting a murderer also aren't equivalent. She said, "I'm more worried about my feelings for Isaac than that farmer I helped kill." And, well, it doesn't matter what I said because she told me to shut up. So, it doesn't matter. And she asked why I was equating murder and homosexuality, and I said I wasn't because I'm not. And she told me to shut up again. She said it's because I'm from the part of America that glorifies murder but condemns blowjobs. She said, "That's the moral standard you hold yourself to. You were 9 when you first shot a gun, and you were 9 when you watched Pirates of the Caribbean over and over because of Orlando Bloom. And you never took the time to deconstruct why you reflexively celebrated violence and condemned love, and you held yourself to that reflexive moral standard your whole life instead of creating your own, and then you died, and you went to hell." And I said that God didn't judge me because she had a guy sacrifice me, so we don't really know if I would have naturally gone to hell. And she said, I think we do, in her stupid voice. She said, "Simon, if you had been born and lived and died in L.A., you would have gone to heaven. But you were born in a small town in Idaho, and you died in a different small town in Idaho. And you thought if you could fold yourself up and tuck yourself away, nobody would notice that you weren't straight." And I said that I am straight. I remember when I was 7, one of my friends said that when his dad yelled at him, he'd stare at this mole on his dad's chin, and it just looked so stupid that he'd laugh. And his dad would yell more, but he'd laugh anyway. So when my dad was mad at me for, you know, eating cat food with a spoon and milk, he was yelling at me, and I tried to find something funny. I really did. He was kind of a funny-looking guy, to be honest, so it shouldn't have been hard. I tried to find something to laugh at, but in the moment, I just couldn't do it, and I started crying. I didn't start crying in front of Surrender, obviously, but I am straight. I just don't want people to hate me. Do you want to hear your story? I didn't write it. I walked out of my meeting with Surrender, and I looked like I would if you were watching me with those old-fashioned paper 3D movie glasses with the blue and the red overlapping and breaking everything's lines. I was sort of shifting and flickering and all the wrong colors, and embarrassment saw me. We talked a little. She looks like a skeleton, and she was dressed like a 2007 emo boy, so, you know, she's a little easier to talk to than the other devils. So, we talked a little bit. She pointed out my body was changing, and I looked down, and I realized my body was changing, and I couldn't do anything about it, and that's when my voice fell out, and my skin sort of shifted and flipped around. My lungs look like they're made of glass. And when I was alive, I used to wish I didn't have a body, and now that I look like this, I just want to feel like myself again, Grapes. I don't know if I can, but I want to. And, I mean, the problem is I don't really know what myself felt like. But I know my lungs, I don't want them to look like they're made out of crystals. Or glass, or they look like stained glass windows, kind of, and I want to feel like myself again. Anyway, embarrassment wrote your story. I hadn't directly talked to her before, but she heard Surrender yelling at me, and she heard about you, apparently, so she wanted to give you a story. She actually passed on a story Lemon wrote, too, and, which is really sweet. I'll read that one to you next time. Embarrassment said I should read her story before Lemon's. So, here's embarrassment's story. It's in a bottle. Here, let me get it. It's, where'd it go? It's in, like, a cheap wine bottle. So, it would have wine, but, there's only a little bit of story at the bottom. And it has a twist-off cap. She said I could drink it, and the story would possess me and tell itself, so. Hi, Grapes. This is embarrassment. I'm here to tell you a story. Are you comfortable? Are you ready? Nod your head if you're ready, okay? I'll wait. Okay, I'm gonna assume you nodded your head. Good job. So, once upon a time, there was a mouse named Sherbert. And ever since Sherbert was a little mouse, he knew there was something slightly wrong with him. He was only half an inch tall the first time he noticed it. His parents ran a mouse bakery, so he was always eating sweets, and he was always caked head to toe in fluffy flour, and he and his parents were very happy. But one day, when he was half an inch tall, he found himself sitting under a big metal bowl crying. He was scared. It's because his hands looked like spiders. All the other mice had nice little pink fingers that ended in little pink claws, but Sherbert had eight thick, fuzzy fingers per hand. None of the other mice seemed to notice. His parents were very busy with the bakery, after all, but Sherbert noticed, and it scared him. He cried about it a lot, but when he got bigger, he cried less, and he hid his fingers in little mouse gloves, and he lied about them. And he had his first kiss, and he felt awful about it because he felt like he was lying to the mouse he kissed. He felt like he was tricking her into loving him, but he was too scared to tell her. And that was reasonable. Sometimes being scared keeps mice safe. He graduated from mouse school, and his parents were so proud of him, and his mom hugged him, and it was terrible because he felt like he was tricking them into loving him. Because they didn't know about his spider hands, and he was too scared to tell his parents. Sometimes mice get scared because of big, monstrous creatures like cats or chihuahuas or rats, and sometimes mice get scared that other mice will stop loving them. Sherbert's parents taught him how to take over the bakery, and at the end of the first day of running the bakery all on his own, he looked at himself in the mirror, and he knew. He was tricking himself because he could see a shimmer in his little mouse eyes that did not exist in the eyes of other mice. He had seen it in the reflection of the big metal bowl when he was half an inch tall. Something behind his eyes wiggled and squirmed. Something behind his eyes terrified him. He was scared, but he took a deep breath. He knew what he had to do. Sherbert knew what was different about him. For the first time in his life, he shook himself all the way from head to toe, and all the flour came off. And Sherbert looked at himself in the mirror. He wasn't a mouse at all. He was 30 sentient spiders covered in flour. And he looked in the mirror, and he wasn't sure if he had changed or stayed the same. And he felt embarrassed, and he felt terrified. He still loved his parents and the mouse he first kissed, and he was scared they would stop loving him. And spiders were very easy to squish, after all. Sherbert knew he could do two things. Firstly, he could rub all the flour back on himself and pull on his gloves. That would be okay. Or he could tell his family he was made of spiders and just really hope that the other mice would be kind to him. Being your authentic self, which in Sherbert's case is 30 sentient spiders, is a very vulnerable, scary thing to be. He would have to trust the mice around him to be gentle, and the mice around him would have to live up to that trust. And they might not. I'll tell you what Sherbert decided to do. He almost started crying, and then he rubbed all the flour back on, and he felt embarrassed. And that was okay. Simon, look, some people are so good at lying that they forget it's a lie. They buy into whatever system because they're terrified and they believe it extra hard for good measure. But if you externalize those beliefs, you could hurt other people. Does that make sense? Like, okay, the spider mouse metaphor is really starting to fall apart, but listen, I think all of this would be better with pictures, you know? Like, you and Grapes could sit in a little circle, and I could, like, flip the little pages, and we could look at pictures of, like, incredibly detailed spiders inside of a mouse. I think that'd be good, but we can't do that. This is an audio-only experience. So just close your eyes and imagine a mouse skin just full of spiders. And listen to me, because I overheard Surrender, and here's what I'm trying to say. It's not always safe to trust other people with your whole self. And sometimes you have to lie or internalize things just to stay safe, and that's okay. Really, that's okay, that's fine. But you're here now, Simon. You're in hell, and it's very safe here. And people care about you. And there's no rush, obviously, but it's okay to be an abomination in hell. You can be 30 sentient spiders inside of a mouse's skin. And you can have big horns and 17 eyes. And it's okay if your skin turns inside out or if you turn lavender. It's okay. And listen, Simon. And once upon a time, there was a monster, okay? And he was terrible and scary, but people loved him anyway. The end. Aw, that... oh. That was really sweet. Oh my days. Oh my days. Okay. Apparently story juice has a bit of a kick to it when it wears off. Okay, embarrassment told me her other names. Change, cringe, ego death. She said embarrassment is a part of learning, and that change is a part of life, and I am changing. My voice is different now, and I'm turning lavender. And I'm scared, Grapes. I'm scared of changing, and I'm scared of the plan Surrender wants me to help with. She wants to overthrow Lucy. She wants to take over hell. And I don't know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna put my guts back inside me, I guess. And I'm gonna listen to the frogs and the crickets. And I mean, I guess I'm scared of change, but I like my voice now, so there's that. I don't know. Thank you for listening to me, Grapes. I know you're changing too, and I hope they're nice changes. I hope you feel safe, at least here with me. I hope you aren't scared. I'll talk to you soon, okay? Good night.